The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
He throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues. Matt and Alex back after a two-week hiatus. Alex, how you doing?
Oh, things have been happening.
Yeah.
Personal news, my dog had to have surgery on her knee. It turned out that she had a foreign object in her knee, which when surgery happened, there was a 4 or 6 millimeter like BB bullet in her knee.
Jesus Christ.
We had not experienced her limping at all until a few weeks ago. So this must have happened before we rescued her. We got her when she was 2 years old. And no situation has happened while we had her. So it was crazy to think that she was hanging out with that in there and it only started bothering her till now.
Wow.
I mean, so she's still kind of limping around after surgery. But, I mean, on top of that, I mean, just everything that's going on in the world right now, it's kind of hard to focus on football. I just hope that everyone listening right now knows that, you know, we're all in this together. We're all humans. If you have any part in your heart that is filled with hate, you need to reassess your situation and understand that everything that's going on right now is incredibly important. And I hope that everyone is on the right side of this, which is Black Lives Matter. So aside from that, I hope everyone else is staying safe inside because COVID is not going away. No matter how much governments want you to think by reopening things, numbers are still going up. People are still getting sick and people are still dying. So hopefully you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. And unlike me, lucky for me, I've actually been able to at least go on a couple of podcasts. I've kept my mind busy.
That's good.
Obviously people probably heard me on the on Anthony Mourinho's show on the Buffalo Rumblings, the BBR podcast, and if you hadn't seen it, give them a look up on YouTube, Shant NFL, where I had an AFC East discussion with members of the UK Dolphins, UK Patriots, and UK Jets. It was great fun. Been a fair few amount of ribbing, mainly towards the Jets and ghosts. I wish I put the Ghostbusters tagline in, but
that would have been fun.
If
the Bills don't play that song at all when we play the Jets at home, then it's a missed opportunity.
I think hindsight is a wonderful thing, because I was thinking about it afterwards. I was just thinking, I kept mentioning ghosts, I should have put in that line.
Yeah.
hey, maybe another show, but
yeah.
Let's get on with the episode. I think this one's actually it should be a good one. It's the evolution of the wide receiver core from 2017, the first year of McBean, Sean McDermott, and Brandon Bean. So initially, what are your thoughts on it?
Wide receiver is probably the most important position. One of the most important positions on the field, with the way the NFL is structured right now. It's the most important position for a quarterback to be successful. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks who have lots of offensive lines that protect him, but no one to throw to. So it's weird to see how this team built the offense. I can understand them building defense first and then offense second. But building defense first, then offense second, and then the wide receiver position third raises some questions. There's going to be a lot of names said on this show that might be wearing Buffalo blue if some things had changed or if some decisions were made differently. But, first look at what Bean and McDermott. And 2017 is mostly a McDermott roster, not a Bean roster.
Yeah.
Not until later in the season does it become so. Zay Jones is a McDermott pick. And out of the gate, I mean, he gets drafted instead of Juju Smith-Schuster, Cooper Kupp and Kenny Galladay, and especially Chris Godwin. So, Matt, to you, I would say that third round, more importantly, because I can understand Zay versus Juju. Juju didn't really have a great rookie year, but when you look at wide receivers who had a good rookie year, would you rather have Cooper Kupp, Chris Godwin, or Kenny Galladay instead of who we drafted in the third round, Deion Dawkins?
Well, I thought we got Deion Dawkins in the second round. I thought
late second. So those are the wide receivers who were picked directly after Deion Dawkins.
To be honest, you're looking at Chris Godwin really for that one. I think what he's done at Tampa since he's actually gone there and actually had a breakout last year. I think that's where you're really looking at for him. I mean, obviously, I think it's mainly down to production at East Carolina that really got Zay Jones noticed by the Bills.
Yeah, but he was a possession kind of guy, and that's who you draft to help Tyrod Taylor, so I get that. It's just crazy because, I mean, Godwin, rookie year, 34 catches, 525 yards, one touchdown. His second year was good, 59 catches, 842 yards, and seven touchdowns. Last year, obviously, was the breakout, but that's just because they didn't have a running game, so is he a product of the system kind of thing?
Mm.
But, I mean, looking at who the 2017 Bills were, this is a team that's focused on the run. You have a quarterback who, you know, isn't going to be focused on 15, 20-yard passes.
Yeah.
Little stuff. So, you know, think about who else we could have had in there. You're looking at maybe Brandon Cooks was traded. He went for a first and a third. I would say no to that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We got rid of Sammy Watkins, who led to being that the second round pick that we got was part of the Josh Allen trade. So that's something that we would obviously say we needed to have happened. Losing Robert Woods to free agency, he didn't do anything with us that required a contract that he got, but he would be great on this roster right now.
Exactly. I think he's still one of my current receivers out there, not just for what he actually brings and obviously being a Bill, but obviously he helps out in that run game and the way the Bills do run the ball. I think that is what you need. You need someone, a wide receiver that is decent enough of a blocker on the outside to try and spring.
Yeah, I mean, looking at what the 2017 Bills could have done, the way I look back on it is that playoff run in 17 was a fluke. And I think most people can agree on that. They weren't going or building a team to be competitive that year. It just kind of fell. That was one of the luckiest teams in the NFL over the last 10 years. So you can definitely see the footprint of the roster that we have now wasn't touched at all because, I mean, nobody back then is on the roster now, wide receiver-wise. Yeah. It was a 3-year plan, and this off season was like the final piece of it. So now we have the roster that we were building towards. It's just surprising that knowing that wide receivers take a year or two to develop, we didn't get anybody in 17 or 18 that was gonna be like the guy this year.
I think looking at it, I went through a couple of days ago just going through the stats of that 2017 season. I mean, your wide receivers were Deontay Thompson, Zay Jones, Jordan Matthews, Kelvin Benjamin, Andre Holmes as a bit part player. Four of them are over 6'2", whereas Deontay Thompson was the only other really comparable receiver who was only 6 foot. So you try and figure out what his, in that first year, were they trying to build that tool receiver, possession style receiver to try and get him down the field? I mean, just looking at the stats from there, obviously the top, who do you think out of all those, including the tight ends on there, which Charles Clay, Nick O'Leary, in 2017, who was the top, who had the most yards out of that receiving core, wide receiver and tight end?
It's Charles Clay, right?
Yeah, 558.
That's such a bad number. I mean, he should have that, but like there should be two people ahead of him.
Next was Deontay Thompson, 6 foot with 430.
I don't even remember who he is.
Then Zay Jones with 316 yards. Jordan Matthews with 282 yards. Kelvin Benjamin, I know he came, I think he came a bit later in the year, but 217 yards. And Andre Holmes, 120 yards. With Nick O'Leary in there at 322 yards. So,
oh, yeah.
So of your top four of receivers, whether it be wide receiver or tight end, you've got two tight ends in there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, that plays when you're the 2012 New England Patriots, you know?
But
that's clearly not what we were going for. I mean, the philosophy back then was run the football and make passes to get first downs, not make passes to score touchdowns. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it as well. I mean, yards per game. Yards per game for Deontay Thompson was 39.1 yards per game. He had a catch rate of 52.9%. Zay Jones had a yards per game of 21.1 and a catch rate of 36.5%. Jordan Matthews, 28.2 yards per game, 69.4% catch rate. And Kelvin Benjamin, 36.2 yards per game and 58.3% catch rate. So you can see how over time they actually looked at the run game with Tyrod. And it's interesting now to see how we're transforming and moving these wide receivers on as the offense, not just for the Buffalo Bills, but for the NFL as a whole, are starting to develop and evolve.
I mean, it's we talk now about what the team is, and they're the team that we want them to be. But 2017, they were in the stone age of offensive game planning. So it's just good to know that everything that you just said, we don't really have to worry about this year.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at it, obviously, it's just you just want to see how it evolves over. I mean, 2018, I mean, that was starting to see more of Brandon Bean's influence a little bit more, and obviously what McDermott got to work with.
Yeah, I mean, they gutted the roster. I mean, like, I think it was like of like the 29 people on the roster that were from the previous administration, only one of them played in 2018 or something like that. But yeah, I mean, just going back to the 17 draft real quick, I mean, just having made the mistake of drafting Zay Jones really just hurts because, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
He wasn't even the next wide receiver taken. The Carolina Panthers took Curtis Samuel out of Ohio State, who still might become something. He's still kind of hanging on over there. Had a decent year. Never really hasn't exploded, you know. 627 yards, 6 touchdowns last year. I mean, that's a team that didn't have a quarterback, though. So he might be something still. But yeah, not getting the right position. I mean, getting the right position in that draft, but getting the wrong guy definitely, I think, made us take a step back in 18. But then again, we went in with Nathan Peterman in 2018, so what the hell do I know? I mean, look at 2018. I mean, they – poor Nate Peterman, though. They're like, here, you be the quarterback, and we're going to give you zero help. I mean, we We signed Jeremy Curley. Great. We draft Ray McLeod and Austin Prohl in the 6th and 7th. Great. You know, nothing for him. I mean, coming off a playoff berth, I don't know how you think to build off that with this shitty wide receiver group. Free agent additions could have been Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins, Crabtree. Some notable trades, Jarvis Landry for a 4th and a 7th. That's a maybe for me. Brandon Cooks for a 1 and a 6. That's a no. Martavis Bryant for a 3rd. That's a no. Amari Cooper, we know, was going to go for a 1st. That's a no. Golden Tate for a 3rd. And then he signed, once he went to Philly, he signed with the Giants then. So he was never really going to stay where he got traded.
Yeah.
Another situation, I mean, this is just like a repeat of what we said for 17. This was a team that expected to go like 6-10, 7-9. But I think that they did that with the hope that Josh would sit and learn.
Bringing
Josh, he had no help, and he did the best he could with what he had. You know, he made Robert Foster someone that we started talking about who's going to get cut, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, just not addressing the situation, the position. And, you know, you can look at the draft and say, would you have drafted X over Tremaine Edmonds? But the answer, I think, would be no. Calvin Ridley, definitely. Cortland Sutton, Christian Kirk, those are all no's for me, right?
Yeah, I think they're building on, as you said, mentioned right at the beginning, that they built on the defense first, get that up to what they actually need. I think the way they've actually done it, the way they've built up the team, is actually probably the best way to do it. And we could see that they were starting to get, trying to adapt, and under new offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, trying to find a new identity, so to speak.
I mean, they tried to sign John Brown in the offseason, but he said no.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at it, obviously the stayovers from 2017, you had Kelvin Benjamin for about 5-6 games, and Andre Holmes again.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the only two real stay-offs. We're just talking wide receiver here, and their numbers were Kelvin Benjamin, 354 yards, 29.5 yards per game, and a 37.1% catch rate. And Andre Holmes, 157 yards, 13.1 yards per game, and a 52.2% catch rate. And after that, you've had all the wide receivers that have come in, or wide receivers that have been drafted and made a contribution, are all pretty much under the 6'2 height. So we were a bit smaller, but obviously a bit faster. And obviously Robert Foster becomes the breakout superstar who we actually had, most people probably had high hopes for, obviously coming into to last year. Mm-hmm. But you can clearly try and see what they're trying to do. I think it's almost like you could put it as trial and error, to be honest. So they've trialed the first year when they weren't ready to draft their quarterback. They trialed how an offense would work with your taller players. Didn't work very well. Okay, mm-hmm. We were more of a running team there. But year two, they had one and a half, we're talking about half of Nate Peterson.
It's okay to forget.
as your quarterbacks, you're looking to try and find the pieces in there that allows them to develop. I think going a bit shorter receiver, maybe the faster, speedier type of wide receiver probably suits the offense that Daboll wants to bring in. What McDermott feels is confident with now, in this case, Josh Allen's, at the time, he didn't know it was going to be Josh Allen, but Josh Allen's philosophy, you get that guy that can shake and split quite quickly and has that speed to gain yards after catch.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I liked a lot of what they did with, what's that guy's name? Isaiah McKenzie last year.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I brought him on in 2018. Mm-hmm. actually 18 receptions, 179 yards, and 25.6 yards per game, and a 60% catch rate. I mean, the top guys in that year was Zay Jones with 652 yards, 7 touchdowns, 40.8 yards per game, and a 54.9% catch rate, and Robert Foster with 541 yards, 3 touchdowns, 41.6 yards per game, and a 61.4% completion catch rate. Sorry, so you kind of see the evolution. That's the word. The evolution of where they were trying to go in the direction, because obviously we knew in 2017 that wide receivers, you were tooled, but they were mainly targeting your tight ends in the running game. But now,
because the wide receivers couldn't get open.
Yeah, and now you can see in 2018 they're starting to move in a new direction with a new offensive coordinator, and actually starting to get a bit smaller and a bit faster to at least allow stretch that field, and then eventually use the underneath. I mean, that's hard.
They learned by doing. They figured, let's get guys who are tall, who might have a large wingspan, who could have a high catch radius. But those guys could get open. So they learned from that mistake and went out in guys who could get open. And I mean, one of the most important things that we talk about is that 2018 year. You know, should Josh have sat all year for his health, for his development? But I mean, let's say that they pull a Kyle Orton and bring a guy in. Maybe we don't sign John Brown and Cole Beasley because they don't have any confidence in Josh because they haven't seen him play. I mean, they see a guy in Josh Allen saying, this guy might be able to, you know, sling it. Whereas if they have a full year of, Nate Peterman and what's-his-face Anderson or whatever, the old guy.
Yeah, and Matt Barkley.
Maybe we don't sign John Brown and Cole Beasley because they don't want to come here, because Josh Allen, who's Josh Allen? We don't know, you know? So for as much as I harp that waiting this long to address wide receiver isn't good, taken in context, 3-year rebuild process, and it's finally coming to fruition. I mean, I think we're just so used to, you know, wanting it done in 1 year or in 2 years.
Yeah.
Having drafted a guy in 17 that would have worked, like Juju, would have been amazing. Then we don't have to trade a first for Stephon Diggs. You know? But nobody's perfect. No front office makes every move exactly right. Teams always miss on a player. So, I mean, that is what it is. It's just, I think that quote will forever haunt me when it comes to McDermott saying that he didn't have enough time to look at the offense. I mean, guy, you got to put points on the board. Think about offense just as much as you do defense. But again, look at the front office, though. Blame Russ Brandon, who fired Whaley after the draft. Like, be smart. Don't do him a favor because he's your buddy. Get rid of him, and then maybe we don't. It's not a 3-year; it's a 2-year rebuild. We didn't have anybody in place for that 2017 draft. Luckily, we hit on Trey, but that's because McDermott was a secondary guy. So he knew what to do there. He came in with the Eagles starting coaching their safeties. I mean, he had Brian Dawkins back then. So, like, he knows how to coach and how to find secondary talent, identify it. But I wish we didn't have to waste first now where we could have had that potential.
Yeah, I think it's quite... It's always good to try and play devil's advocate on there. I mean, if you start playing Peterman for the whole season, or you brought in Anderson and Barkley, it's more likely that you're not going to probably get John Brown. You may not get Cole Beasley, and it's possible that you're setting yourself up for a high draft in 2019 for your wide receiver, which then could set you back a couple more years while he's getting up to speed with the offense. So in a way, people in 2018, when they're saying, let's not chuck Allen in the deep end, let's let him sit. In essence, it's, as they always said, trust the process.
Yeah.
And they trusted Allen to start, whether they won. Yeah. Whether they won one game, 6 games, 10 games, 16 games, or anything like that, it's showing that they're not afraid to make those decisions. And it gives them a lot more insight to how their quarterback plays and what they can do in the next off season, knowing that pretty much most of the dead cap space was actually had disappeared, that they could make that change. They could make that evolution and get those players in. I mean, 2019, we rolled obviously with Brown, Beasley, McKenzie, and the only other one really to make a contribution, obviously Duke Williams. And at that point, you can then see how that evolution has happened. You've gone from your 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", wide receiver in 2017 to John Brown, 5'11", Cole Beasley, 5'8", Isaiah McKenzie, 5'8", Duke Williams, okay, 6'3". But you can see how they've tried to adapt to what the offense is and what Josh Allen can do. And in the end, it actually reaped a lot of benefit from having Josh Allen play the whole 2018. And also the benefit of having a guy, having guys like Beasley, like Brown, who can separate, who have that little bit of separation and quickness to get away after the catch. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to see. I mean, just going through the stats from last year, John Brown, 1,060 yards, 70.7 yards per game, a 62.6% catch rate. Only five drops. Cole Beasley, 778 yards, 51.9 yards per game, and a 63.2% catch rate with six drops. That you can see is how that's evolved. I mean, together with both the receptions of 72 receptions for John Brown and 67 receptions for Cole Beasley, you're looking at pretty much half of completed throws that season to those two wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So you can see how it's gone. And obviously most of the stats have actually gone up in and gone down in a couple of, in a good way since they've gone to having that smaller, speedier type of wide receiver. Because I mean, look, you're looking at 2018, he had a 52.8% completion rate, 172.8 yards per game, and a 3.8% interception rate. Last year, 58.8% completion rate going up, 2% interception rate gone down, and 193.1 yards per game going up. And obviously, that's with smaller receivers. So we're seeing a move from your big-bodied receivers from 2017 to mixture to then pretty much your smaller guys in 2019.
Yeah, and the depth of it is so great. It all goes to speak to the importance of Josh Allen's progression, evolution, and growth, because Cole Beasley was frustrated as the number three in Dallas. And now here he is, the number three again. If his numbers can't stay in line with what he had last year, I mean, a number three receiver in the NFL, this pass-heavy league, he should have like 600 to 700 yards and five touchdowns again. If he doesn't get that, and then we start having some unrest in the locker room because Josh didn't take the next step, and the offense isn't as explosive. We know that guys like Diggs might speak up. So we have the pieces now, and I think it's time. And all hope lies in Josh taking that next step.
Yeah, I think what you've got to look at it is there was a few questions that really made me think when I was doing it is obviously what can we take from the evolution of how the wide receivers have gone from your tool to your short? Is it a case that they're moving and developing in relation to what the NFL are doing, or is it just the ball game plan and how it's suited for Josh Allen? Because you're trying to put at the point here is that with the top, I used the top 11 NFL yards for receptions from last season. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey was the only non-wide receiver in there. But you've got the likes of, you had Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Devontae Parker, Keenan Allen, Kevin Golladay, Chris Godwin, Amari Cooper, DJ Moore, Jarvis Landry, and DeAndre Hopkins. Out of those, how many of those do you think were similar sort, like, say, under 6 foot two?
They're all over 6 foot, right?
They're all over 6 foot.
Except for Christian McCaffrey. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm trying to limit, find out where it really comes out, where, what height really, because I say we've had 6 foot five, 6 foot four, 6 foot three wide receivers with little production. Yet yeah. You've got your 6'1", 6 foot five, 5'11", 5'10s that start to make progress. I mean, top of the list is Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. He's over 6 foot two. Second in the list was Julio Jones, over 6'2". Mm-hmm. Fifth in the list was Devontae Parker, over 6'2", or I think he was 6'2". Then yeah. Keenan Allen, who was sixth, and Golladay, seventh, all over 6 foot two. The only ones really in between that were Goodwin and McCaffrey.
Yeah, it's so, weird because like those guys that you name, especially including DeAndre Hopkins, those guys are just all freaks of nature. I mean, you get one of those guys every, not even every year, but like every other year almost. So to think that for a team to have one of those guys, they're more lucky than anything, because you get a lot of guys who are drafted at 6'3 or taller who excel at the combine but can't put it on the field. I think it all comes down to the program that they came out of and the coaching that they have in the NFL. Because I mean, we've tried our hand at drafting tall guys before and it's never worked out, but when you look back at that, we haven't had a good coaching staff since Marv Levy. So
yeah. So going back to a question, do you think it is the way the ball wants to run the offense, the fact that we didn't have in the first 2 years of his system any really tool players, tool wide receivers that have gone on, but then we've signed Gabe Davis 6'2" mm-hmm. and Josiah Hodgins at 6'3".
No, that's a good question. It would be interesting to be able to ask him that, like what he wants out of a wide receiver in his system. Because when you look at the team that they've built, it's clear that it's guys who are shifty and can get open. So it's weird when you think about Josh Allen and his accuracy. You want a guy who can go and find the ball, and you can usually say that's someone who's going to make contested catches, who has a big wingspan. And, I mean, Diggs has a good contested catch rate, and he's good at finding the ball. But, I mean, you have guys in John Brown and Cole Beasley who are guys who are shifty and go get open. And, I mean, you've seen Josh miss a lot of wide open guys deep down the field last year. So I think it's all about building a team that's complementary to the players, not the playbook.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're looking at Stephon Diggs obviously coming in. Last year, 1,130 yards, 75.3 yards per game, and a 67% catch rate. Even in their college career, Gabe Davis had 16.1 yards per reception on 2,447 yards, and Hodgins 13.2 yards per reception on 2,322 yards. So I think they're trying to look more towards speed, but again, you've got the height of 6'2 and 6'3 in there. that actually really does say what direction they're looking at.
Yeah, and I think that it's going to be next year where we see Gabe Davis really take a step, if he does and if he can. I mean, every prayer I have is that he does, because, you know, it's about time that we start seeing this team win. I made the mistake the other night of watching the Four Falls of Buffalo on the ESPN player, which I signed up for a free trial of, which was good because I wanted to watch the Bruce Lee documentary, 30 for 30. But yeah, I was like, hey, Marissa, let's watch this so you get to really understand and get the feel for the pain. And man, I'm ready to be successful again like that. No matter how much it hurt to watch the losing, and my God, it hurt to watch all that losing. But everything that led up to that, you know, when you look back at those Bills teams in the 90s, will you consider them a success or a failure?
I'd consider them a success. Mm-hmm. I think it's factors dictated that and conspired against them, but you can always say that it was more of a success.
Yeah, who else makes the four straight Super Bowls? Not even the Patriots dynasty can say that they made it to four straight.
Exactly.
I mean, if you can have that team now, I think that team perfectly fits what the NFL is now. And I mean, they had wide receivers of all shapes and sizes. I mean, you had small guys, you had tall guys, you had guys middle of the pack. But I mean, you had speed, you had strength. And we're building towards that kind of diversity that they had back then, and that's what an offense needs out of their wide receiver core. Yeah. And I think this is the period on the end of the sentence is get a group who could do everything. Mm. You know, if you're gonna draft a guy, make sure that in his limited snaps you play to his strengths.
Yeah.
You know, have someone who you can rely on third down. Have someone who can get open, not just intermediately, but after 10, 15 yards. For as much as they all feel the same, Diggs, Brown, and Beasley all play differently. And the addition of Gabe Davis and what Dawson Knox can do and what Singletary can do out of the backfield, this roster that we have opens up the playbook now more than any team that we've had in the McBean era. There's not a hole. There's not a playmaker that you can say, the Bills offense is missing this prototypical type of player. So it's great that we're here now. And it's great that we're in the final year. The final year of the rebuild is over. For all the misses that they had in 17 and 18 in building the wide receiver core, they built the wide receiver core in 1 year.
Mm, exactly. I mean,
because, I mean, my philosophy is draft young and develop, and they went out and got guys to play now.
Yeah.
Fantastic. While also having guys to develop.
Exactly.
So, you know, trust the process. Hats off to the front office. For every mistake that I can point out, they've added, like, two positives.
Yeah. So one question I want to ask before we just move on to 2020. I think this has come from on Twitter. I think it really goes in well to what we're actually discussing about the wide receivers. Mark Dodsley. He goes, how important is this year because of the wide receivers? We saw brilliances of him last season.
But you want to restate that question? We had some static there. I didn't get the first part of that question.
How important is this year for Josh Allen? So I'm going to add in there because of the wide receivers themselves. Because obviously we saw the glimpses of his brilliance last year. But he also had some chokes and some bad games. Can we put it down to how over the years the evolution of that wide receiver core has actually... has actually improved, that's allowing him to get into better positions, especially with the catch rate. And does the season hold out that he can progress even more and get those completion rates up a lot more?
I don't think that you can fully blame the wide receivers for Josh Allen's 2018 season. That was all Josh just being super raw. Then again, no one's going to do anything with the wide receivers that he had in 2018. But to answer the question of how important is it this year, I think it's not at all. He can shit the bed, and he's going to get 2021.
Yeah.
If they go 8-8, 9-7, hey, there's an extra playoff spot.
Exactly. You know?
So everything's kind of falling our way this year to be average and still be successful.
Yeah.
Obviously, the schedule looks bad, but you know, in the NFL, everything can change in 1 year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really worried about that. But yeah, if he does the same thing he did last year this year, and it's going to be frustrating to know that that's his ceiling.
Yeah.
But with how competent our front office and coaching staff is, if he's the 21st best passer in the NFL, we still have a playoff team.
Exactly.
If he takes a small step forward and he's the 17th best passer, I think that's what we've always wanted from him. Just be middle of the pack. We don't need him to be Drew Brees right now. Once this offense starts getting priced out and the difficult decisions start to happen for Bean, then we're going to need him to be a lot better. You draft a guy in the top of the draft to be a franchise quarterback, and franchise quarterbacks don't sit middle of the pack. So eventually he's going to have to be a superstar.
Exactly.
But right now he's a star, and that's because of personality and his athleticism. His arm is, you know, balanced out by his strength, but his accuracy is, you know, begs for, you know, an upgrade. But yeah, I wouldn't be. And I had said before on previous shows that I'm ready to criticize Josh Allen in 2020. And I am, but I still think we'll get W's out of it. So I'm not worried about his progression yet.
Yeah. So let's move on briefly. Last little segment before we actually, before we end, let's see if we can try and have a look at what it means for the wide receivers and all that in 2020. Obviously we've all seen the photos of, Allen getting important reps with Diggs and all the offense, the wide receivers and tight ends down in Florida.
Yeah, how Diggs rocking that WrestleMania t-shirt. That's hot. That's fire. Down with that.
And how can we see that going forward? Because, I mean, obviously, we've now got become more interested because you're looking at Diggs, Beasley, and Brown as your locks. They're pretty much locked in. They're not going anywhere. Bar a humongous injury, touch wood, that anyone gets injured for the whole season. So you've got those three. It's an interesting now camp battle that we've got. And how do you see, by looking at the evolution, does McDermott, does the ball look to use the other wide receivers in there? So Duke Williams, Gabe Davis, Isaiah McKenzie, Robert Foster, Isaiah Hodgins at all to really complement that offense for Josh. Could we see a surprise cut? Could we see both rookies getting through?
Yeah, I think both rookies get through. I think Isaiah McKenzie makes it because he also can do something that not everyone can do. The question is, do you keep Andre Roberts for the return game? He was six. Even though he didn't score a touchdown, he was successful last year. But can you just have someone else do that? I think that's more a product of the special teams blocking schemes than it is the returner. I think Duke Williams is gone and Robert Foster is gone. Just because, A, to give those guys an opportunity to land somewhere else, but also, B, because they do what Diggs and Brown do. And Duke is special, but also that's why you bring in Gabe Davis, because he has the size, but he needs to add some muscle. But he can do what Duke does, and he will be better at it quicker than Duke Williams taking a step, because Duke, at his age, he's been in the league, he's been in the CFL, he is what he is. Gabe Davis can be molded and can grow. So I don't think there's going to be a surprise cut. If it is, it's McKenzie, but I'm not surprised if McKenzie gets cut because he's not a top three.
Mm. I mean, yes, with the Andre Roberts thing, I think I have a feeling, and I mentioned it on previous podcasts I've actually I've done with Marino and on for Shant NFL, that I believe and I think they could get Christian Wade on just for special teams, get him fielding kicks and punts. If they can work on that during training camp, I could see that happening. Andre Roberts being cut, and actually maybe McKenzie getting in, maybe they take a seventh and get sign a free agent who may get cut that they've liked in the draft, or a veteran free agent to come in as well. So I could see Roberts being a potential camp casualty, but it just depends on how they go. Because you're right, the special teams is all about the blocking and movement, all that. And if Roberts can still get those 30, 40 yards returns in, especially on kick returns, then do you put that down to him being a great kick returner, punt returner, or do you put it down to the blocking? Can you get someone like Christian Wade? Can you get someone like Isaiah McKenzie to actually do that and get the same results?
It's tough to say where the success comes from, because I'm not watching all 22 of special teams. So I'm not trying to watch the blocks develop or anything, but I know the importance of them. So field position is important, but you've seen Josh be able to go 90 yards.
Yeah. So
taking into account the depth at wide receiver now, I mean, if you have Andre, if you go in with seven's too many, right? So six: John Brown, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, Isaiah McKenzie, Gabriel Davis, and then Andre Roberts. Is six too many? Do you only want five? Because Ray, is he a good special teams blocker? You're not keeping Isaiah Hodgins then. If you do, then that's seven. I mean, I think Andre Roberts is absolutely on the bubble, just because he does something that is only like, it's not one third of the game. It's like one eighth of the game.
Yeah. I mean, looking at it, looking the way it goes, I think they will keep six. We'll probably talk about it in a bit more depth, probably a little bit further during training camp. But yeah, I think it is a case where it depends on how they fit, what they feel at tight end. Do they keep four? Do they go three? Maybe keep a seventh? And can they get someone else to fill in for that? Fill in for Andre Roberts, so they can bring Isaiah Hodgins in to have the two rookies alongside McKenzie, Diggs, Brown, and Beasley. So it really opens up an interesting training camp when training camp actually takes place, which now it looks like it is going to happen, which is good, not just for the offense, yeah, but for players as well, that we can actually see what the thinking is, especially when they do their depths at each position, at who they feel is coming along that's going to get those meaningful reps, maybe with your second team rep. So if you get Andre Roberts mainly running with the third teams all the way through, and you're getting Hodges and Davis constantly with the second team with McKenzie, you're kind of thinking that Roberts is potentially being pushed out, and behind the scenes they could be working on someone to take Roberts's role. As I say, you could look at Christian Wade and say, I will keep bringing him up, I'll keep batting the field for him to actually make it. I do believe that within the next year, that he would be on an NFL roster for an NFL game day, that you could find those players to take over from Roberts and allow him to really mix and match the wide receiver core and maybe add another position if necessary. That's my two cents.
I mean, it's hard to argue with anything there. It's just I don't want to spend too much brain space on the sixth wide receiver position.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. There's so much excitement around the top of the depth chart that as long as we don't have Leotis McKelvin returning punts and kicks anymore, I think we're going to be okay.
Or Marquise Goodwin lying down in the end zone.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I think we can really come to a conclusion there that over the 3 years we can really see a stamp of Bean and McDermott trying to stamp that wide receiver core and what they're really looking at, trying to get your smaller receivers but also your speed receivers. So
yeah, it's either a position that they needed time to figure out, or it's a position that they just waited to figure out because they knew that they either devalued it early or they just made a few missteps. Either way, it looked to have worked out.
Yeah.
So I'm not upset at where we came out.
Yeah. So you've got anything else to add before we wrap this show up?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, we didn't talk about the Ed Oliver arrest, but I mean, you know, on any day you can put names in a hat in the NFL and draw at a guy who does what he did. It's irresponsible, and you know, hopefully he learns from it. I'll never be able to understand what life is like being a millionaire in your early 20s, but. As long as he doesn't do it again, and he didn't hurt anyone, I won't hold it against him because we've all made mistakes. I know I've had a few pops while driving. I just didn't get caught. So chalk it up to being in your early 20s, and hopefully he learns from it.
Yeah. So coming up, hopefully we should have a fun next couple of episodes. I'm working very hard behind the scenes to actually get those sorted. I'd like to personally shout out right now to the new followers we've had in the last 48 hours on Twitter. Hope that you actually do get to listen and subscribe to this podcast like hopefully everyone else is, because we obviously enjoy what we're doing. Keep following us at UK_Bills on Twitter, at RWBB_podcast on Twitter. Go back, listen to our previous episodes, hear my appearance on Anthony Mourinho's BBR podcast and the Buffalo Rumblings. Check out YouTube, as I say, for Shant NFL, as Shant NFL, for our for the AFC East discussion I had. Keep subscribing and downloading, reviewing, rating, and for me. And for Alex, it's stay safe and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us. Yeah, not us. You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work. No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.